Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Home First Finance Company India Limited Q1 FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Deepak Khetan, Head Investor Relations of Home First Finance Company India Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Rayo. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Home First Finance Company's earnings conference call to discuss the financial results for the quarter ended June 30, 2025. We hope you have had the chance to review our investor presentation and press release, both of which are available on our website and the stock exchanges. As per our practice, we have also uploaded an Excel sheet containing historical data on our website for your easy reference. From the management, we have with us today Mr. Manoj Viswanathan, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, and Ms. Nutan Gaba Patwari, Chief Financial Officer. With that, I now invite Manoj to share his insight on overall performance. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Deepak. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Q1 FY26 was marked by two important events in our history. First, we raised 1,250 crores through our first QIP, which has significantly increased our net worth and further strengthened our capital base. Also, our long-term credit rating was upgraded to AA stable by ICRA India Ratings and CARE. Both these events further enhance our ability to build a strong and large housing finance franchise. Now, let me walk you through Q1 FY26 highlights. AUM growth remains strong, growing at 28.6% year-on-year and 6% quarter-on-quarter to reach rupees 13,479 crores. Disbursements for the quarter stood at 1,243 crores, which was the second highest in our history. The previous highest was in Q4 FY25, which is seasonally a strong quarter. Disbursements in April were slower than expected. However, May onwards, we are moving on expected lines. The shortfall of about 50 crores will be covered in H2 of the year. Our disbursal guidance for FY26 remains in the range of 5,600-5,800 crores. We have grown strongly in Madhya Pradesh, Maharashtra, and Gujarat. Growth in Tamil Nadu and Telangana, which are two other large markets, was muted in Q1. However, we are confident of a rebound in these regions in the rest of the year. Home First brand expansion strategy is based on a contiguous expansion into large and high-density affordable housing finance markets. During the quarter, we added three new physical branches, taking the total to 158 branches as of 30 June 2025. We added 75 employees during the quarter, taking the total employee strength to 1,709 as of June 25. We intend to add six new branches in Q2. Our origination market share in the 5-25 lakh ticket size in the locations we are present in, based on bureau data, has gone up from 1.5% in FY22 to 2.3% in FY25. We continue to retain a strong origination yield of 13.4% despite an 84% share of individual housing loans. This is a significant growth lever at our disposal in a falling interest rate environment. Asset quality saw a seasonal uptick in 1+ DPD and 30+ DPD. However, we expect the numbers to normalize over the next two quarters. 1+ DPD is at 5.4%, up by 90 basis points on a quarter-on-quarter basis. 30+ DPD is at 3.5%, up by 50 basis points on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Gross Stage 3 is at 1.8%, up by 10 basis points on a quarter-on-quarter basis. The above seasonal uptick was more pronounced in two regions, Surat and Coimbatore, Tirupur. We have already seen a turnaround in Surat in July. We are expecting Coimbatore also to be resolved in the next few months. Our credit cost is at 40 basis points. We continue to maintain a credit cost guidance of 30-40 basis points, ensuring disciplined risk management even as we scale. Technology remains central to our execution and continues to give us competitive edge. Home First embarked on the journey of exploring AI/ML technologies more than 5 years ago. In Q1, we launched Pulse, which is an omnichannel conversational AI platform which enables integrated customer conversations across various channels like voice, WhatsApp, SMS, email, etc. It is functional in seven Indian languages and uses AI to facilitate business process flows and provides actionable insights through advanced transcription and analytics. Pulse use cases span across lead generation, customer verification, underwriting, collections, and customer service. During the quarter, we also went live with our internally developed enterprise-grade document management system and treasury management system. The core benefit of developing these applications in-house is that these are tailor-made to suit our business flows, and more importantly, we remain agile to adapt to changing business requirements. Digital adoption continues to be strong and a key area of our focus as we grow. 78% of our approvals in quarter one were facilitated via the account aggregator framework. More than 80% of our loans are digitally fulfilled through e-agreements and e-NACH mandates. And 96% of our customers are registered on our mobile app, with 88% of service requests now raised digitally. During quarter one, we got 70 additional green homes certified, taking the total to 190. Our efforts and dedication towards responsible and sustainable financing are evident from our ESG scores. During the quarter, Morningstar Sustainalytics has reaffirmed our low-risk ESG rating. SES ESG Research has assigned a score of 80.8 in 2025 versus 78.9 in 2024. And CRISIL has assigned a score of 64, up from 63, implying strong rating. I would like to share a quick update on the PMAY-2 scheme. I'm happy to share that 7 customers have already received the first tranche of subsidy, with another 7 approved and awaiting funds. We expect the scheme to pick up traction with increase in customer awareness and streamlining of the process. With recent cuts in policy rates and the government's continued focus on capex, growth, increasing disposable income and housing for all, we remain confident of a strong demand for housing and housing finance. Given a strong and unique business model, we are well positioned to harness this multi-decade growth opportunity. With that, I now hand it over to Nutan to take you through the financials in more detail. Over to you, Nutan.
Thank you, Manoj. Good afternoon, everyone. Let us start with the key financial metrics. Total income for the quarter stood at 455 crores, up by 33.4% YOY and 9.4% QOQ. For Q1, our spreads excluding co-lending was 5.1%. Cost of borrowing excluding co-lending maintained at 8.4%. Disbursement yields were at 13.4, in line with 13.3 in Q4 FY25. Net interest margin for Q1 was 5.2%, up from 5.1% the previous quarter. Cost to income at 34.2% in Q1, decreased 150 basis points on a QOQ basis. Operating expenses to assets was at 2.7% for the quarter, in line with our expectations. We expect this ratio to remain range-bound within 2.6 to 2.7% as we focus on growth and expansion. Our profit after tax increased to 119 crores, up by 35.5% YOY and 13.6% QOQ, with return on assets of 3.7% and return on equity of 14.9%. Pro forma pre-money ROE adjusted for QIP for Q1 was at 16.6%. Moving to provisions and asset quality. Credit cost for Q1 stood at 40 basis points. We continue to maintain our annual credit cost guidance of 30 to 40 basis points. We continue to adopt a conservative approach to provisioning, maintaining a provision overlay over and above ECL requirements. As of June 25, our total provision coverage is 43.1%. Moving to balance sheet and capital position. Our borrowing profile continues to be well-diversified and cost-effective, reflecting our prudent financial management. 60% of borrowings come from private and public banks, 16% from NHB, 19% from assignment and co-lending, and balance from NCDs, ECB and NBFCs. During Q1, we executed direct assignment transaction worth 184 crores. Our disbursement under co-lending increased by 87.5% YOY, and 43.3% QOQ to 78 crores for Q1, taking the co-lending book to 434 crores or 3.2% of the total AUM. Co-lending will continue to be an important part of our strategy to strengthen our ability to cater to higher ticket size segments. We aim to take co-lending contribution to 10% of disbursements as we scale. Our Q1 reported cost of borrowing is competitive at 8.4% excluding co-lending, enabling us to maintain healthy spreads. With the recent rate cuts and our improved long-term rating, we expect the cost of borrowing to improve in Q2. Our June and July marginal cost of borrowing is sub 8%, giving us significant confidence that we can deliver benefit in COB in the next 2 quarters. Coming to capital adequacy and liquidity, our capital adequacy ratio as of June 25 stands at 49.6%, with Tier 1 at 49.2%. Our net worth stands at 3,855 crores, up by 76.2 15.6% YOY and 52.9% QOQ. Book value per share as of June 25 is 373 rupees. Our strong balance sheet with high capital base underlines our readiness to take on the growth ambitions of the company. With that, we conclude our opening remarks and are now happy to take your questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. First question is from Suraj Das from Sundaram Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, the question is on disbursement. This quarter disbursement has been weak. I think you called out a couple of places where probably there was seasonal impact. But sir, if I look at your guidance and what effectively you are saying is that over the next 9 months, the disbursement growth will be something like, you know, 24-25% on a YOY basis. But if I look at your disbursement this year, this quarter, it has been only 7%. And even if I let us say adjust for the co-lending business, it is hardly 4-5%. So, sir, I mean, the question is, in terms of disbursement, what are the challenges? I mean, in your couple of geography also, not only the ones that you have called out for, but also let us say in UP and Uttarakhand, I think the AUM growth is slowing down and all that thing. So, if you can give us more color in terms of disbursement and then what has been the pain point probably for this quarter and how you are planning it, if you can give us a bit more color on that.
So, you know, as I mentioned, disbursement only in April was slower than expected number. So I think just the year opened on a slower note. See, generally Q1 is a much lower number in the industry compared to Q4. You know, till now we have always been slightly above. If you see, except for last year where we were about 5% higher than Q4. If you see previous years, that is 24 over 23, 23 over 22, etc. You will see that we are just 1-2% higher than Q4 in Q1. So generally it is a seasonally low quarter. Other than that, frankly speaking, yes, April was slightly slower than expected. That's why I said there's a 40-50 crore kind of a difference than what we expected. But otherwise, May onwards, we are moving on expected lines only. In line with what we have planned for the year, which is about 5600 to 5800 crores of disbursal. If you see our history also in the past, there have been, if you see FY23, for example, quarter one was low, but then, you know, quarter two, quarter three, there was a jump, or rather quarter three, quarter four, there was a jump. So, you'll have to look at it through the year. Other than that, actually, there is, you know, there is nothing additional to add. As I mentioned, in Tamil Nadu and Telangana, there were two large markets again, you know, the Q1 was a little muted, which is why, you know, we kind of came a lower than expected. But this trend is likely to get corrected and we should be on moving on expected lines in future. There is nothing structurally which is, you know, difficulty in disbursements or anything which we are seeing on the ground.
Okay, sure. And sir, if I may ask, what was the your April disbursement this year versus historical run rate? I mean, if the April was slower, is it meaningfully slower?
Yeah, I mean, it was lower than what we expected. So, we were looking at maintaining about a close to 430, between 430 to 450 kind of a run rate. But April alone came a bit lower. So, I think it was around 380 crores. So, that's about 40 to 50 crores of difference came in April itself. We caught up in May and June we caught up, but then, and even July, you know, the trends are good. So, I think it was just a blip in April.
Okay, sure. And one last question from my side, in terms of asset quality, again, I mean, partly seasonal, I can understand, but again, this quarter, if I see the gross increase in stage 2, stage 3 plus write-off, that number has been quite elevated. Is it the new branches that you have opened over the last 1 or 2 years that is getting matured and hence you are seeing the pain now, or what it is, or do you think there is only seasonal?
See, there is a, see, seasonally there is a 30-40 basis points impact in general. So that's why I've also called out that, you know, other than the seasonal, we had a couple of markets where we had a more than the seasonal impact generally that we see in quarter one, which was Surat and Tirupur. I mean, these are markets which employ a large number of people, and I think a little bit of this sluggishness in the economy and, you know, the credit squeeze in the economy has led to a little higher than normal uptick in delinquency. You know, by the same token, I mean, these are basically people who get employed in factories, etc. So they end up, you know, catching up in a couple of months. So, you know, they were not able to pay in June, for example, but in July now, when, for example, in Surat, we are seeing a turnaround. So a lot of the, many of the people who did not pay in June are now paying two installments in July, for example. So it's just something that we feel is under control.
Okay, sure. And the, on a full year credit cost basis, what kind of credit cost you are expecting this quarter, this year, for the full year?
30 to 40 basis points is what we have always mentioned, because there are always ups and downs, you know, in this business. So 30 to 40 basis points, we should be in that range. Not expecting higher than that.
Sure. Thanks. Yeah, that's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Renish from ICICI. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So just two, three things from my side. Obviously, sorry to coming back to the disbursement front. So, you know, when we look at in absolute terms, you know, obviously it is hovering around, you know, 1,150 crore, the 1,250 crore. Despite we adding 25 new branches, adding more than 400 people in past 1 year. So obviously the scale up is sort of below the expectation. And, you know, what gives you that confidence that, you know, we'll catch up this, you know, lower disbursement in April, in like May, June, July, because two things. So obviously Coimbatore, Tirupur, you said will take some time for a full recovery. And also, I don't know what's your view on TN and Telangana, but what are the feedbacks you are getting from the ground which gives you that confidence that, you know, we'll be able to sort of recover this loss disbursement in April?
So two things. One is that, as I mentioned, May and June were normal in terms of what we expected. Since we bounced back in May and June and even in July till it, whatever numbers we have, so that gives us the confidence that this was April was a temporary blip. So April, if we had, for example, in April, let's say we had clocked the same number as May, then I think we would not be having this conversation probably. But it was much shorter. I mean, it's like I said, it was only 380 crores. So that was the only, so that is what gives us the confidence that 3 months in a row we have been able to move in a different, I mean, move out, as expected. So there is no structural issue or anything like that. That is one. And secondly, if we look at the overall industry, we saw, I mean, we also compared ourselves, our quarter one with, you know, the rest of the industry. In fact, in full year FY25 as well as quarter one versus quarter four, if we compare ourselves with, you know, some of our peers or other larger industry, the drop has been much more substantial. So, which is, you know, so in our case, it was a 2% drop compared to quarter four, which we accept is not something that we expected. We were expecting a 2-3% increase on quarter four. But if we look at overall industry, the industry drop is even more, it's much more substantial than us. So that's what gives us the confidence that, you know, so we are much better off, and we are anyway, we have already corrected that trend in May, June and July. So that is what gives us the confidence that we should be able to meet our overall year numbers.
Got it. And sir, would you like to share your July disbursement number?
July disbursement number is, I mean, so, you know, we are still 5 days away from month end, so it will be difficult to share that number.
Okay. So secondly, on this small ticket LAP piece, you know, so obviously we are hearing, you know, multiple players highlighting stress in this portfolio. And of late, we have been sort of scaling up this book aggressively in recent past. You know, what's your sense on this LAP book, and would you want to continue this growth path in this product given the current scenario?
So in lab, our see, we have not we have always been very picky about what we are picking up in lab. You know, the what we are onboarding in lab, because we never had a pressure to grow that book. And a large, I mean, and it is anyway not a large contributor to our overall growth. So we are you know, we are not feeling worried about the lab portfolio as such, because and it is actually not giving us any you know, additional stress in spite of all the you know, noise in the market. So actually, yeah, because the contribution to disbursement is only about 16 or 17%. 80% plus is still coming from individual housing loans. So which is why we are not worried about the lab portfolio.
Okay. And have you sort of analyzed your stock in lab? I mean, in terms of, let's say, number of customers having more than 3 loans, or any data would you like to share which can sort of give us some comfort on the health of this portfolio currently?
Yeah, we have done that. So we did it a few months ago. I think at the time the discussion was more around MFI business and, you know, how it impacts, etc. So we did a mapping of whether our customers are MFI customers. So we only found about 1% odd overlap of our customers with the MFI segment. As far as, you know, other loans are concerned, there has always been an overlap. I mean, if you see the bureau penetration of our portfolio, it's 85%.
Right.
So, which means 85% of the customers are already coming to us with some kind of a bureau score, which they must have obtained because they already have some kind of small ticket loan which they have borrowed. So that has always been there, and that number is only increasing every day. So that 85%, I mean, because that's the almost the entire portfolio. So difficult to say what is impacting, not impacting. Maybe the, you know, like I said, in some of these markets like Surat, Tirupur, etc., where the where we are dealing with, you know, lower income category people, like people like factory workers, etc., there is, I think, probably some impact of that. But it is very so little that, you know, difficult for us to attribute everything to that.
Got it. And just a last data keeping question, maybe for Nitin. So what's the realized yield under co-lending, and also yields for loan in more than 25 lakh rupees ticket size, which is 14% of AUM?
Realized yield on co-lending will be just around 10%. That is what basically price to the borrowers. What we end up earning is much more if you go through the unit economics principle. But essentially what we charge to the borrower is about 10%. And what was your second question?
Yields for loans in more than 25 lakh rupees ticket size, which is 14% of AUM.
About 50 to 75 basis points lower. So around, let's say, 12%.
Okay. Thank you and best of luck.
Thank you. Next question is from Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. Thank you for taking my question. First thing, I just want to understand this increase in 1 plus DPD that we saw, about 90 basis points QQ. For us as well, was the slippage much more pronounced in the month of April, and then in the months of May and June, things kept getting better? Was that the case for us as well?
The slippage was high in April, yes. In May, we kind of pulled back. Then there was some slippage in June as well.
Got it. And July, again, the same thing? I mean, trending along similar lines as June, or is there a recovery?
July is much better than June. I mean, it's much better than May also.
Got it. And Manoj, while you've already spelled that out, but what I'm trying to understand is what the industry saw in the month of April was a little unusual of sorts, and to be honest, is not too much of an explanation of why that happened in April. I'm talking at the industry level. So as for us, in your view, is it just a macro weakness, tightness in customer cash flows, which is resulting into this, or is it something else?
So there would have been some collection, I mean, some weakness at a customer level, but at least internally, I think it was the collection efficiency reduction as well. Just our inability to collect on these customers in April for various reasons. Customers being on leave, employees being on leave, a bit of collect. I mean, it's basically a collection efficiency issue. I don't think there was any. I mean, there would have been marginal difficulty that customers faced, because if the entire industry has faced something, that probably there was some marginal difficulty that customers faced. But that was, I think, more of unavailability of customers, you know, fewer employees on the job and so on.
Got it. Got it. And then the second question I had was around Karnataka. Just trying to understand, we all know because of e-khata issues, things have been weak. The momentum has been weak in Karnataka. Mm-hmm. So just trying to understand, I mean, Karnataka is not among our top five markets. And despite that, I mean, I see the growth that we are seeing in Karnataka for the last 3-4 quarters, right? That has been weaker than our top five markets.
Correct.
So if you could just help us understand what's happening in Karnataka on the ground, and when are we expecting things to recover in Karnataka?
See, Karnataka is, there are multiple issues in Karnataka. One is, of course, that we are concentrated more in Bangalore. I mean, almost our entire business comes from Bangalore, right? Bangalore and surrounding areas. I mean, we don't have an extensive distribution across Karnataka. And secondly, there's the e-khata issues there, which has impacted our volumes over the last, I think, 3 quarters now. It's still not resolved. That process is slow. And of course, the whole, the employee dynamics in Bangalore are also very, very different compared to the rest of India. So I think all of these factors are there, which is why it is not one of our key markets. We will probably get better bang for the buck in many of the other markets. So we have to solve these things, one by one. It will take some time for these things to get resolved. I mean, of course, if the e-khata issue gets resolved, the numbers will come back, because we have a strong presence in Bangalore. But in terms of distribution across the state, etc., those are things that we need to, it's more long-term, and we need to solve for that.
Got it, Manoj. And Manoj, last question for you, why she said long term. So that reminds me, I mean, if you could just speak a little bit about what's our market share like today, over the next maybe 3 to 4 years, what's our aspiration like in terms of market share? And if you could just also briefly speak about geographies that you will be focusing on. I understand for the last 2 years, right, we've been talking about some newer geographies that we've been focusing on in the last couple of years. So if you could just briefly speak about some of our market share aspirations, and within that, I mean, last part of it, where will they come from?
Yes, so market share, as I mentioned on the call, our market share, if you see over the last 3 year period, this wasn't market share, origination market share. It's gone up from 1.5% in FY22 to 2.3% now in FY25. So there is a market share gain, and our ambition is to take this number to closer to 5%, say in the next 4 to 5 years. In terms of markets, so last year, if you remember, we spoke about, focusing on newer markets like MP, Rajasthan, UP, Uttarakhand. So out of those 4 markets, we have had a reasonable success in Uttarakhand, Rajasthan and MP. Or has a very good success in these 3 markets. As far as UP is concerned, we did not go as aggressively as the other 3, because UP is a large market, still a little more rural, than the other markets. So we have been cautiously expanding distribution in UP. So we will continue to do that. So probably we will see more action in UP over the next maybe 2 to 3 years rather than immediately. But in MP and Rajasthan, you can see that, our AUM share of those states have gone up, and they have become fairly significant markets for us now. As far as other markets are concerned, we again did a good turnaround in Maharashtra. Maharashtra, if you see, a couple of years ago, the AUM share of Maharashtra was reducing, but now it's again started turning around, and the AUM share is increasing. It is a very large market, and it is becoming significant for us now. Tamil Nadu and Telangana, we had some issues over the last two quarters in terms of leadership, etc., in terms of people, leadership team and so on, which we have now rectified. So this year we should definitely see uptick in those markets. So these are the largest markets. So Gujarat, Maharashtra, Tamil Nadu, Andhra and Telangana put together, and MP. And these are our largest markets, followed by Rajasthan. And then of course we have a Chhattisgarh, we have UP, Uttarakhand, which are smaller for us, and Karnataka.
Got it, Manoj. Thank you so much. And one last question for Nutan. But I mean, just looking at your borrowing mix, right? We are increasing our borrowings from public banks now versus the private banks. So if you could just help us understand a little bit about, are we getting lower cost borrowings from public banks, and which is where that inclination to borrow from public banks, or how should we think about this?
Yeah, so essentially it's a function of where the drawdown is happening on that particular quarter. We did a large drawdown from SBI in quarter one. That is why if you see that public banks have gone up from 34 to 36. As a strategy, we are kind of not very choosy between a public sector bank or a private sector bank. If I were to lay down top 1, 2, 3, the first thing that we focus on is tenor. And second is diversification, third is pricing, and second or third probably, you know, depending on the market situation, can be either way. But tenor is sacrosanct for us. We don't do short-term borrowing below 5 years. We don't do that. So when you consider that, depending on where we are getting all these three right, we will borrow, and drawdown essentially depends on what time period we get to draw down depending on the capital charge and so on. This particular quarter, we have drawn down from SBI, and last quarter also it was SBI, and now we have completed that large line. So now you will see some expansion in the private bank line, so it will keep interchanging, really speaking.
Got it, but the pricing is broadly the same, be
oh, yes.
Private or public.
Yes, the benchmark for the pricing could be different, but the landed cost is broadly the same.
Great, thank you so much, and I wish you and your team the very best.
Thank you, Abhijit.
Thank you. Next question is from Chandrasekhar from Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. I have a few questions. Manoj, I think over the period of time, the productivity metrics on a per employee basis have actually come down a little bit. I mean, maybe you want to spend some time on where are you deploying people? Are you beefing up sort of more of the back end, or is there a reason why the productivity has come down, or just because you've added a lot of branches? That's question one. Second is on spreads. Given that we've had the rating upgrade, what does it? I mean, in the previous cycle, when rates went down, we did see a brief period of spread expansion because you said the customers weren't particularly sensitive. But I noticed you've done, I think, a 35 bps cut from starting August. So how should we just think of spread more near term in that context, and you know, more over the longer term? And in Maharashtra, just take us through, I mean, what's happened, because it's really pretty much a sharp jump which has happened in any markets there. And then lastly, just on early delinquencies, obviously this has been inching up. You, from the commentary you said, you sense that that's topped out and then coming off over the course of this year? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Chandra. So on the productivity side, see, productivity has been fairly constant. So if you're just referring to probably quarter one, dip in quarter one, it is because of the dip in numbers.
Over a period of time, not specifically just, I understand quarter one is a little seasonal, but I mean, we used to have disbursals per employee for the quarter of, you know, 75-80 lakhs, it's down to 70-73 lakhs. I mean, that's not moved up despite sort of ticket sizes over a period of time coming. Sort of case.
It is
75 down to 72, so it's just some.
You're talking about the AUM per employee, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the cases, outstanding cases per employee are a little lower now. Disbursals per employee are a little lower now. That's been a sort of trend over a period of time, not specifically one quarter related.
So disbursement per employee, see, largely we benchmark to about 3 to 3.5 crores a year, which is broadly we are in the same ballpark. Except that one or two quarters, you know, when the employees join, like quarter four and quarter one is when large number of employees join and the employee count goes up. So at that time the volume is also correspondingly lower. So at that time there is a slight reduction, but I think it should broadly be in that range of about 3 to 3.5 crores per employee per year. So we are not seeing that going down. We will continue to maintain it at those levels. As far as spread is concerned, again, as I mentioned on the call, we have actually tried to maintain the yield at about 13.4% in spite of the overall, you know, reducing trend in interest rates. So that is one lever that we have with us, and you know, we can kind of use that to build up disbursals as we go forward. You know, as we start seeing the transmission and as we start seeing the cost of borrowing coming down, we can actually use that to build up volumes. So we have not actually reduced the done any repricing as of now. I heard you mention 35 basis points.
Yeah, this is August last year. Sorry, that's my mistake. Sorry.
Yeah, so we have not done that. So we still have those levers with us. We can especially on the origination side. If you see last quarter also, we maintained our origination yield of about 13.4%. So that is a strong lever that we have with us, which we can use to build up volumes going forward. On Maharashtra, yes, there has been definitely a turnaround. So last 2 years, we were working on, you know, building the team, rebuilding the team, getting our positioning in the market, etc. So those things have worked well, and we are now at a 20 to 30% kind of, I think a 30% AUM growth in Maharashtra, I mean, which used to be much lower earlier, if you see a couple of years ago. So I think last year, we managed to get into that 30 plus percentage of AUM growth in Maharashtra. And Maharashtra is one of the tough markets, you know, where Bombay and Pune are really very formal markets with large players, etc. And here, if we had managed to, you know, turn this around and get to a 30% plus kind of an AUM growth, that gives us a lot of confidence that, you know, we can kind of do the same kind of business and same kind of turnaround in some of the other markets where, you know, there's some slowdown. On the delinquency side, I think, which was your fourth point, quarter one always is the delinquency goes a little higher, but except in one or two markets where we saw, you know, more than the seasonal uptick. But then the good news is that in July, for example, in Surat, we are seeing a good pullback. Like I said, a lot of customers are making good the payment which they missed in June also. So we don't feel worried at all about that uptick. We should be able to pull back on that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chandra.
Thank you. Next question is from Amit Ganatra from Invesco. Please go ahead.
Yeah, question is for Nutan. Your cost of borrowings quarter on quarter is almost same.
Yes.
From when should you start getting some benefit of your rating upgrade as well as, you know, the general interest rate cuts?
Right. So Amit, if you see, it's flat quarter on quarter. June and July, our marginal cost of borrowing is below 8%. And I'm expecting quarter two, reported cost of borrowing to be 20 basis points lower. So we should start seeing that benefit. And hopefully by Q4, this 8.4 should be more like 8%.
Okay, but this is largely on account of general interest rate cut, or is there any extra benefit that you are now getting on account of rating upgrade?
See, the spreads have reduced when we are negotiating with the banks. The spread that used to get added has started to come down by 15 to 20 basis points, but of course the overall rate cycle has also come down. So it does get mixed up to some extent, so having a proper bifurcation which is, let's say, auditable will be very difficult.
No, only thing is that shouldn't your cost of borrowing improve more than the general, you know, interest rate cuts, or is it that your hunger is so high in the sense that you are still growing fast, so that. And anyways, you mentioned that it's a tenure, and then you mentioned one more thing, and then pricing is the last thing that you guys look at.
So. Right. So, Amit, the thing is that the issue is not the size of borrowing that we are looking to do either this year or next year. We are small in the relative scheme of things. But what happens is that the benchmark for each of the lines that we draw down, for example, ranges between repo, T-bill to a 3-month MCLR all the way to a 12-month MCLR. And let's say if you're, you know, working with a large public sector bank, they will stick to an MCLR-based pricing only, and then the lowest MCLR is a 1 month. Versus a private sector bank, depending on which bank you may be referring to, you can focus on a repo-based pricing also. And ultimately what boils down to is today's landed cost. But what gets reported is if I have done a transaction, let's say 6 months out, and the MCLR has not moved down, though the overall policy rate has moved down and GSEC has moved down, so it takes time. So the only bank that has taken down MCLR meaningfully today is SBI. Nobody else has done that. So transition takes time. What we are trying ensuring is that our marginal cost of borrowing is below 8.
Okay. And have you done any corresponding actions on the yield side?
Not yet. So what we had discussed to date is that we will first want to see the cost of borrowing line go down and then take the call. So we have parked that decision for either middle of Q3 or early Q4. So Q2 we are not looking to make any changes.
Okay. And lastly, your generally, you know, disbursement to some extent slowing down was there. It's not only this quarter, it has been there for, you know, more than one quarter now. So just one question there, that is it on account of, you know, rising competitive intensity, or is it on account of, so you mentioned, you know, couple of markets. So or is it only very, very geography based, or is it on account of, you know, higher rejections at your end, because asset quality basically, you know, is also important. So, and what would be the reasons that one can attribute?
So, Amit, I think other than April, frankly, we don't see it as a disbursement slowdown. Because last year, I think this discussion again came up because in Q1 we had grown quite aggressively, and then, you know, Q2 and Q3 we kind of just consolidated. So there were questions around, you know, why the disbursal is kind of flattish across Q3, but that was more intentional in some ways. And then Q4 again we saw a decent jump, almost 10% on Q3. So followed by, I think April was the only disappointing month, if you ask us internally. Otherwise May, June, July, we are going as we have planned. You know, we don't see it as a stress on disbursement or a difficulty in disbursement.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Anand Bhavnani from WO. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. Two questions. One is, if you can tell us approximately what percentage of our disbursement in last 1 year would be to under construction apartments under the CLP, construction linked plan framework.
So under construction on the AUM is generally around 12 to 14% is generally under construction. As you can see from the chart, which shows the pre-EMI versus EMI. Just tell you the chart number. Yes, this
14.
Is page number 14. So we show this under construction risk in this page 14. So 13% is under construction, which is instant pre-EMI mode. Where customers are still not fully, I mean, the loan is fully not fully disbursed. And 87% of the AUM is fully disbursed.
And second, when I look at the payment rate, it seems our repayment rate has come down in a sense that maybe the PTR out has come down in this particular quarter. Anything that you can share with us which explains this trend?
It's a Q1 phenomenon, Anand.
Q1 to some extent, you know, the overall industry is not as aggressive as Q4, so the BT out rate comes down a little bit.
Got it. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you, Anand.
Thank you. Next question is from Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. So first question again is on growth. So if I do numbers to deliver 20% disbursement growth for the full year, we have to do 500 crores disbursement per month from here onwards. And my sense is that we did around 430, 440 crores disbursement in May and June. So how do you plan to increase the disbursement run rate to 500 crores per month?
Yeah, so basically that requires us to have two quarters where we have maybe a 7 to 10% kind of a growth rate on previous quarter, which we have done in the past, and now the organization is much larger with much wider distribution. So getting that additional 40-50 crores, we don't see it as a big challenge, especially in a falling interest rate environment. So I think broadly what we are saying is that this quarter we do about 1350 kind of a number, then next quarter we do about like a 1450 and then a 1550 kind of a number. We should get there, ballpark.
Okay. And secondly, so since our RM looks after collection as well as disbursement, so sync, so when one DPD increases, the load on the RM for follow-up, etc. will also increase. So in that context, how do you plan bandwidth of the RM, and how many cases does the RM handle on collections, and so to make sure that our sourcing engine remains intact, how do we plan the bandwidth for the RM?
So bandwidth for the RM, so RM is expected to deliver about 5 loans in a month, which translates into about 50-60 lakhs of disbursal. That's on the disbursal side, and then on the collection side, they generally handle about 15 to 20 overdue customers. So that number has been kind of static over time. So we don't see the, we don't actually see a bandwidth problem for for the employees. Plus, a lot of tools have been made available over a period of time, like there is e-signature process, the electronic, payments through UPI. So actual effort has actually diminished, so which is why the bandwidth is available for them to do the activity. So when I say 20 customers who are overdue is allocated to a relationship manager, typically if I call those customers on phone, out of 20, about 10 would make a payment without any physical visit. So I just need to send them a link and they will make the payment through UPI, etc. So effectively, I'm left with only 10 customers whom I have to visit to convince them to pay. Bandwidth has never been an issue.
Sure. And third question is on OnePlus DPD. So is it a regional problem? You mentioned Surat a couple of times. So is it more confined to Surat where we have seen this one DPD rise, or it's we are seeing it across geographies?
So I mentioned the two regions where there was a more significant increase. So out of the total, let's say 16 or 17 regions that we have carved the country into, there were about 5 to 6 regions where there was a more than normal uptick, in April and June. Out of these 5 to 6 regions, there were two regions which were more pronounced, which was Surat and this Coimbatore, Tirupur. The remaining 10 regions, frankly, the numbers were very benign. There was no uptick at all.
Okay. And there also we are now seeing improvement in the month of July is what?
That's right. In July, there is a substantial improvement in Surat.
And in other geographies as well, right? Coimbatore and Tirupur.
Coimbatore, Tirupur, not as much as Surat, but it should improve over the next 2-3 months.
Sure. And last question is, what is the count of active connectors for the quarter?
3600.
36. That number has also tapered off. I think this number was 3600, more than 3600 in Q3 of last year.
Q4.
So this number has also...
Q4 number was a Q4. Little higher. Yeah. So, which is also kind of, it's again flows from the flag that the disbursal was lower than last quarter. Because this is a number, this is directly correlated to the disbursal. So, the way we calculate this number is basically connectors who have contributed to a disbursal in that quarter. So, since the disbursal was 2% lower, this number is also slightly lower than last quarter.
And the RG's connectors linked to the company or they're linked to the RMs? Basically, is our business model still dependent on employees and RMs or even irrespective of the RM, these connectors will keep giving us business?
Irrespective of the RMs, the connectors will keep giving business because they are linked to us. I mean, there's a contract signed with the company and if an RM exits, then we know that a particular connector is, he needs to be reallocated to a new RM. So that information is available to us. So we end up reallocating the connector and then some other RM will look after that relationship.
Sure. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you very much. Before we take the next question, a request to participant to please limit your questions to two per participant. The next question is from Boon Han Ong from Lion Global Investors. Please go ahead.
Hi, I'm new to the company, but I have two questions. The first question is regarding the fee income. The fee income has been growing very strong. I just want to know if this growth is sustainable. This is the first question. The second one would be in terms of your cost income ratio. We have seen good improvement in the recent quarter. Do we have a target in terms of our cost income ratio in the near term? Yeah, thanks.
So thank you for your questions. So the fee income has gone up because we have seen some mixed improvement in our insurance commissions partners. Yes, it is sustainable. We had guided a few quarters back that the insurance commission will range between 15 to 20 crores a quarter. So we were holding to that number. So 15 to 20 crores is one what should expect every quarter on that particular line. Cost to income has gone down. What we are anchoring the conversation to is operating cost to total assets, which is a 2.7%. What we are guiding is 2.6 to 2.7% for the full year. Considering that, we are still investing for growth. We are also adding branches and people. So 2.6 to 2.7 is where we are broadly focusing for the rest of the year.
Right. What about the near term? I mean, the medium term, what do you expect the cost income ratio?
If you take a 3-year view, a medium term view, we should definitely go more towards 2.5.
Okay. Okay, I see. And this fee income itself, with the growth itself, how is it? Is it linked to the loan growth, or how should I look? How should I do an estimation in terms of this?
It is linked to the disbursal growth. So it is linked to the disbursal growth. So about 90% of our customers take an insurance policy, and we earn commission on that. So broadly speaking, 90% of our disbursals and a similar percentage of insurance commission we can do. What I will do is I'll do a separate call with you and just take you through the model. Deepak will reach out to you and we will set up a call with you.
Thank you. Next question is from Rajiv Mehta from Yes Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. Manoj, can you comment on the trends in employee attrition at the branches and how is your share in your connectors business volume moving? Are we, gaining share within existing active connectors? How are the dynamics there?
Sorry, I missed the first part. It was a bit jumbled.
No, just two things. Employee attrition at branches and your share in the connectors business volume. How is that moving?
Employee attrition has been steady, around 30-ish, 30% across the last, I think, several quarters, 7-8 quarters, it's been in that range only, 30% range. So which we think is kind of a healthy range for us. As far as contribution or sorry, the share of the connector is concerned, see, by design we are trying to keep it very granular. So we don't want any connector want to get a large proportion of business from one connector. And our sales teams are incentivized to kind of diversify their origination across connectors. So because connectors, I mean, if you see, there are different segments the connectors are dealing with. So we want to make sure that, you know, the connector is obviously getting a, you know, higher segment loan or a prime loan, then they go to a different company. And if it is a loan that is suitable for us, it's in the affordable segment, they send it to us. So to that extent, the share will be bifurcated across various companies depending on the segment that they are operating in. And by design, we are trying to keep it very granular.
Correct. Okay. And just one thing, this observation is on the UP and Uttarakhand market. I mean, in the past two quarters, the AUM growth has significantly slowed down. Anything to read here, or if you can comment why it has slowed down in the last two quarters?
So UP, if you see, last 2 years we were saying that yes, we want to expand in UP. So we put in four branches, so in key markets in eastern part of UP, which is, so Lucknow, Allahabad, Varanasi and Gorakhpur. So that is eastern UP. And a part of the UP business also comes from what is getting booked in Ghaziabad. So because technically that falls in UP. And I think 2 quarters ago we articulated that in some markets we had tightened some of the credit screens. Especially on the property side. So yes, this holds true for the Ghaziabad business as well. So Ghaziabad and Eastern UP, we have those screens were tightened, and as a result of which there has been a slight reduction in the business in those markets. We know it's a very large market, but we want to approach it very cautiously. So which is why you are seeing that little bit of a slowdown there.
And anywhere else, we have done some tightening of underwriting or selection?
We did do that last Q2 over Q2 and Q3 especially of last year. We did put in certain screens in place which are continuing. So higher ticket cases, pass through more screens, and as you can see there, the pace of increase of the higher ticket cases has slowed down in from Q2 of last year. The 22.5 million or 25 lakh ticket size segment was rising sharply, if you see the previous year. But from Q2 of last year, that increase has slowed down a little bit. So we have, because we wanted to kind of focus on the affordable segment, smaller tickets, etc. So we did some tweaks to control the increase in the 2.5 lakh ticket size plus. So those screens are in place and they continue.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to participants to please limit your questions to 2 per participant. The next question is from Pranav Gundapalle from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my questions. 2 questions. One is on the ticket size. I think you have talked a lot about this natural increase in ticket size over time. Some of the peers have seen their ticket size stay stable, I guess, by going down a segment or two lower. The question is it more a risk filter that's preventing us from going down on the ticket size, or is this a limitation of the model, either because of geographic presence, sourcing model, or whatever else? The second question is on attrition. You did mention the overall rate is stable at around 30%. Could you give some color around either tenure-wise or seniority-wise the position-wise attrition? Just trying to get a sense of, if someone sticks around for a year, year and a half, or 2 years, how does that number change? And third, if I can just squeeze in one last one, what percent of customers during a quarter would get a lower rate offered, right? Because they express willingness to or intention to move out or any other reason, what would that rough number be? Thanks. Those are my two questions.
All right. So on the ticket size, you know, it's multiple factors. So obviously there is risk filters there, but there is also a viability angle. So very small ticket sizes, if you actually wanted to make it viable, then we need to offer very high rates, which we are uncomfortable with. So for example, to make a, if we have to actually offer a 2 or 3 lakh ticket size loan, we will have to do it at very high rates. I mean, maybe 15-17% to make it viable, and to make it equivalent to a loan at a 10 lakh loan at a 13%. So we are uncomfortable doing those small ticket loans at very high rates. So which is why, you know, when we talk about our segment, we start at 5 lakhs. So we don't even talk about less than 5 lakhs. So 5 to 25 is what is how we define our segment. So which is why, you know, to some extent, we are not as low as some of the other peers in as far as ticket size is concerned. So there is risk as well as viability. Both filters are there in ticket size. On the second question on attrition, see, RM level attrition in the first 1 year is generally higher than 30%. So 30 to 35% it tends to be. It slows down in the second year. So between 12 to 24 months it's a little lesser. Then again it picks up a little bit in the 24 month period. 24 to 36 months it comes back to around 30%. In head office and post 3 years, the attrition is much lower. So it generally tends to be in the 10 to 20% range, post 3 years and in head office. So this is the breakup of the attrition across various segments. And as far as the third question was concerned,
percentage of customers who...
Number of customers who are getting a repricing offer. So it would be around 50 odd customers per month. So maybe about 600 to 1,000 customers in the entire year.
Right, that's very helpful. Thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from Nishin Chavate from Kotak. Please go ahead. We seem to have lost the line for Nishin. We'll move to the next question. Next question is from Kunal Shah from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the question. So firstly, just wanted to gauge in terms of what led to this problem in Surat and Coimbatore, because I think you said like you'll be able to roll back. So was it more of internal issue or these were like the external circumstances in terms of slowdown in the economic activity? Because it doesn't seem like maybe the economic activity levels would have changed, okay, which is making us confident with respect to the rollback. And particularly that question is in context of provisioning coverage, because that's also down to 22% odd. I think that confidence that we'll be able to roll it back and get back to 25%, but if it doesn't come through, then seasonality might impact the credit cost, as we will need to get towards like 25% kind of a coverage. Yeah.
I think in April, generally, you know, Q1, April, May, June is a little more difficult in terms of collections, which is why you see the numbers going up every year in this quarter. It's because, you know, customers are, you know, part of the time they are on vacation, plus they have some stress of school fees and things like that. So there is additional load on the customer's wallet during that quarter, which also requires, you know, higher collection intensity during that quarter. So I think in April of this year, I think on both fronts we had a problem. So one is obviously the collection, customer was under stress, and plus collection intensity could not be matched, the level of intensity that is required to collect, because again, you know, our employees are also on leave, during that quarter and so on. So I think it's a combination of both factors, a bit of collection intensity, efficiency issue, plus some stress at a customer level. And in Surat,
so the only question was on quantum. You see, generally it rises, but maybe if you look at last 3-4 years, the increase which has been there, that could be say even 1+ DPD, it would have been closer to like say 30 odd basis points or so, and this time it seems to be relatively on the higher side at 90 odd basis points on 1+.
Right, correct. So yeah, I think, you know, it's in Surat in any case there are fluctuations in the incomes of the customers, because they are all dependent on this whole diamond and textile industry. So depending upon demand in the market, global markets, etc., they get overtime, they may not get overtime. So there is some fluctuation in incomes. Normally what happens is in April there is an uptake, and then we kind of claw back in May and June. This time we had a regular May. I mean, we had a clawback in May, but then surprisingly in June, for some reason, there was again some slippage. So that was the only, I think, difference if you see past years. So normally whatever is the slippage in April is we pulled back in May and June. This time in June also there was some slippage, so which is why there was a more than normal slippage. We don't see any fundamental issue as such in these markets, except that I think these are more lower income customers. They're all factory workers and people of that profile. Other than that, we don't see anything which is of a, which indicates a pattern. And as I said, the good news is in July it's getting clawed back, so we're not reading too much into it.
Okay, so July itself we are seeing a significant clawback from this. So doesn't seem to be more like an economic activity issue. Yeah.
Yeah, so some fluctuation maybe in economic activity possibly. Other than that, we are not seeing anything more significant than that.
Okay. And on the coverage side, maybe getting down to 22% now, we are at a relatively lower level compared to our recent past as well. So maybe obviously it depends in terms of the ECL model, but would we need a higher provisioning out there?
Kunal, will be watchful on the overall number. If the number rolls back, then the coverage comes back to 25, because we will unlikely reverse the provision that we have taken. In that extreme scenario, it does not, then we will build the provisions.
Thank you. Next question is from Nishant Chavate from Kota. Please go ahead.
Hey, sorry, I got dropped off. My question was essentially on competition in affordable and prime segments. And I think as the BT out trend for you and your peers seems to suggest that competitive intensity seems to have actually gone down, while in the prime segment has gone up. So how long do you think, what could be the reason for it, and how long do you think it could be sustainable?
So first quarter one, anyways, the competitive intensity is a little, there is a lull in the competitive intensity, especially in BT outs. Because in quarter four, you know, many companies use BT outs as a channel to push up the overall yearly numbers. And in Q1, there is a slight drop in that. Otherwise, you know, overall, I think, you know, competitive intensity, you know, as we have always spoken about it, there is ups and downs, you know, across years. We don't see anything which is fundamentally different. But, I mean, probably one quarter it was a little lesser, I mean, especially on the BT side.
Sure. No, putting it differently, you know, there are some of the high-rated NBFCs who are now entering into the affordable space. Do you see them, and their cost of funding comes down, I think, much faster than you and some of the other peers. So do you see them getting more aggressive on rates?
Yeah, I mean, see, they, I think most of the companies, what they have realized is that they need to maintain at least a 4.5% to 5% spread in this business be able to make a decent ROE, or at least, I mean, if you are talking about the highly rated higher rated companies, and you know, the companies which have a higher proportion of prime lending, and they are, you know, the affordable is more as an add-on. So if the affordable business needs to be ROE accretive, then they need to also maintain a similar spread, you know, 5% spread, because the expense is not going anywhere. The expenses will be similar, whether it is a large company or a small company, the expenses are going to be similar. So the operating expenses and plus the credit losses, etc. So I think broadly the industry has come to the conclusion that, you know, this is a business that runs at a 5% spread. So we don't see, rational companies dropping rates too much. Of course, there are different strategies in the market. I mean, some companies are cutting rates to certain segment of customers and then, you know, subsidizing it by offering a much higher rate to certain other categories, etc. Those are all, more temporary in nature. So I don't think it will work, on a long-term basis. In the core affordable individual housing segment, you have to maintain a 5% spread. Otherwise, your ROE will be much lower than what we have delivered.
I want to add one point there, Nishint. If you look at the larger NBFCs, the cost of borrowing difference for us and them is less than 60 to 80 basis points. So essentially, if you are doing a 13% product, they will have to do it at 12, 20 on a blended average, which is not very different, which is not the reason why the customer will move. And if they do substantially lower, then to Manoj's point, they don't deliver the product level ROE and it will get called out at some stage. So it is unsustainable to that extent. So they'll have to end up coming close to the similar number where we are. The 60-80 basis points is the only difference that can be there, not more than that.
Got it. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you, Rishant.
Thank you. Next question is from Subhranshu Mishra from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Manoj. Hi, Nutan. Two or three questions. The first one is to maintain the disbursement run rate, what is the number of loans that we do on a quarterly basis? I understand there are variations in each quarter, but we would have a ballpark budget in our mind for the number of loans, given the fact that the 80s largely remains similar. Again, when we have to look at the OnePlus, what is the curing of this OnePlus till 15 DPD? From 16 to 30 DPD, what is the curing? And what was this year ago? Third is, if we can have the concentration of disbursements, give us the concentration of AUM, concentration of disbursements of the top 10 branches, 11th to the 25th branch, and 25th till the 50th branch. Thanks.
Sorry, last question I did not...
Size of branch-wise disbursement.
Concentration of disbursement for the top 10 branches, 11th to 25th branch, 26th to 50th branch.
Yeah, no. So broadly, if you're looking at the top, I mean, let me go reverse and reverse as far as your questions are concerned. So if your question is that what is the size of disbursal or quantum of disbursal across the top 10 versus the top 20 and top 30 branches, broadly that is your question. So top 10 branches would be delivering on an average about 5 crores a month in terms of disbursal per branch. So that number which you said, 10 versus 20 versus 30 will broadly be in the range of 4 to 6 crores. So 4 crores per month to about 6 crores per month would be the variation between the top 10 versus the top 30 branches. And I think you were talking about OnePlus, how that gets cured in the next two buckets. Basically about 70 to 80% of the customers, eventually get cured, and about 20% then flows forward. So that is in each of these buckets. I mean, bucket, the 0 to 29 bucket, about 88, we get an 80-85% resolution, so about 15% moves forward. And then the next bucket, that is 30 to 59, the resolution is about 60 to 70%, so about 30% moves forward.
I get that. I am really focusing on the 0 to 30 here. The idea was to understand what flows from 15 to the 16 to 30 DPD, because till 15 we can call them or we can send SMSs or WhatsApps. The cost would be much lower versus 16 to 30 to cure. That is the idea to understand.
0 to 15 days. Okay. 15 days.
Yeah,
okay. The bounce rate is around 15%, right? And by 15th, we collect about 50% of that. So if you see the number by 15th, it is about 7% would be, 6 to 7% would be left as of 15th.
Right. So we have left around 20 to 25% which needs to be cured, right? Which will flow into the next bucket, 30 plus.
Let me clarify this. Okay. Fourth of the month is the bounce NASH mandate, which is when we collect 15% of all customers' bounce. On the 15th of that month, we've collected another 7%. So on 15 days past due, we have 7%. One DPD plus, which is 30 day end of the month, is 5%. Are you with me?
Right. Right.
Those are the numbers.
Okay. Right.
So you're talking about 100 customers who are entirely in zero, you know, bucket zero, or you know, clear on in a particular month, you know, and let's say 100 of them bounce the payment. Typically by the 15th we collect 50% of that. So 50 customers we would collect by the 15th of the month, and then about 50 customers would be left between 15th to 30th. And again, if you look at that number by, let's say, 20th, we'll be left with about 20 customers. So only 20% of the customers who bounce in the beginning of the month will be left by 20th of the month.
Right. So this 16 to 29 DPT, what is the cost per file? Do we have that number or a budget?
Cost of collection you're talking about?
Yeah, per file, on a per file basis. Just 16 to 29.
So cost of collection is all, because see, we don't have a separate collection team which is only focusing on this particular bucket. We have the same relationship manager who is also doing various other activities, who is collecting, you know, from these customers. So it will be part of the relationship manager's overall compensation. So like I mentioned at the beginning of the call, the relationship manager's broad responsibilities are to disburse a certain number of cases, say about 5 to 6 transactions a month, and plus collect about 20 overdue payments. So that is how the RM's cost is bifurcated.
Thank you. Next question is from Raghav from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi, good evening, and thanks for the opportunity. I have 2-3 questions. One is, you've partly answered that, but what is the length of period or years of experience you consider when you build your ECL model?
From the origination of the company. The 15 years.
Right, from the origination of the 15 years. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Okay. Understood. Also, my second question is, when I look at the total stock outstanding of stage 2 and 3 assets right on an aggregate basis, the growth in that number is somewhere around 50-54% YOY, and that growth rate has been increasing for last 2-3 quarters. That suggests some deterioration in underlying asset quality. I know, coming back to asset quality, but you know, what is the reason for that? What are your thoughts? Because it's not just in this quarter that we've seen that, but even in some of the previous quarters, you know, the growth rate in stage 2 and 3 has been higher than the underlying AUM growth. Any comments that you would have on this?
No, Raghav, there's no structural, you can say, problem with the portfolio as such. These are, I mean, because the number itself is, if you see our stage 2, it is one of the lowest in the industry. So on that small number, you know, there's some slight movement. We don't see it as, at least we are not internally not alarmed about that number.
Understood.
I mean, if you compare our stage 2, it is lowest across all our peers. So that number might have gone up by, you know, a few basis points. So we are not alarmed.
Okay. I was referring to stage 2 and 3 cumulatively, but I think that explanation holds there as well.
No, so Raghav, I was just looking at the numbers. Q4, for example, Q4 our growth in stage 2 was only 3%, vis-a-vis our AUM growth of 6%. So I think when you look at stress, you will have to look at it differently, because A, they are in different buckets, provided differently, and the impact on financials is also different.
Understood. Nutan, I was referring to say the YOY numbers, because just to adjust for the seasonality that a particular quarter has, so and hence there were, that's where I was coming from. So yeah, the other question that I have is, see, in 1HFY25 you added a substantial number of employees, right? That number versus FY24 was up 30%, but since then I think the addition has not been a lot, 1650 going to some 1700 employees. You also said that attrition has been fairly stable, yet your value productivity per employee has not improved, right, despite rising ticket sizes. And given that a typical employee becomes more productive with every passing month, why is it that the AUM per employee, dispersal per employee, is not increasing?
Disposal per employee is that there is a certain range in which it moves. Like I said, 30 to 30. 35 million or 3 to 3.5 crores is the disbursal per employee per year. Unless there's something very structurally we change, that number will not go up substantially. A few years ago we introduced, you know, some level of automation, so we were able to kind of, you know, move up that number. So unless we do something which is structural like that, that number is going to be range bound.
Thank you. Next question is from Dixit Shah from Ascendancy Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah. A few statistical questions. Of the 864 crores for Uttar Pradesh and Uttarakhand, what is the AUM for Uttar Pradesh?
Uttar Pradesh total is about 450 crores.
450 crores. And, sorry, what? 400?
450 crores is the total Uttar Pradesh, which includes the Ghaziabad, which falls technically in Uttar Pradesh, but actually it's part of NCR, plus Eastern UP, which is about 100 crores.
Okay, got it. And during the quarter, I think we might have not drawn any sanctions from NHB, I think, because it's flattish QOQ. Did we draw down any?
Not from NHB.
And one more statistical question. Of the total AUM, what is the pure individual housing loans in the AUM?
84% is the housing loan.
Individual housing loans?
Yeah, we only do individual.
Understood. Now coming back to a few questions on state-wise growth. So Madhya Pradesh, we are seeing massive amounts of growth. It has gained YOY more than 200 basis in our composition. Is there, are we seeing a higher ticket size growth there, or the Madhya Pradesh market in itself has seen a very massive growth spurt and we are capitalizing on it? One question on that.
All of it actually. Madhya Pradesh is growing well. Ticket size is growing and number of units is also growing.
And we don't see any respects to asset quality issues, because some of the players were having a little bit of an issue, specifically in southern part, and I was going to come on that. One of the players was which we compete in the southern areas was saying in the less than 20 lakhs, they are not seeing as much as demand. A few of the other players were saying that there is good demand. So in the state of Madhya Pradesh and also in south where we are present, how are you looking at the demand scenario, and are we seeing a lot of competition and with respect to the affordable segment, and a sense on the overall view on the housing credit market?
So Madhya Pradesh has been developing well, I mean, because industrialization and urbanization is picking up there and it's been developing well. So it is a growth market in an overall sense. Plus we have also capitalized on it. We have a great team there and we have very good asset quality there. So we have capitalized on that growth. Other markets, south, etc., are also growing. So AP, Telangana, Tamil Nadu are also growing well. We had some issues in Telangana and Tamil Nadu in terms of team, etc., which we have sorted it out. So growth should come back there.
Thank you. Next question is from Prithvi Raj Patil from Investec. Please go ahead.
My question was largely answered. I just wanted the guidance for the ROA, ROE, given that right now the CRA is quite high and there's a lot of liquidity on the balance sheet.
Right. So we had mentioned this in the last call. Currently, our ROE for Q2 will be lowered as we take on board the full leverage benefit. We aim to deliver 15% ROE in the next 5 to 6 quarters and then build from there. As far as ROA is concerned, we look to go closer to 4%. Again, coming purely from the leverage benefit.
Okay, thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. Next question is from Shubhranshu Mishra from PhillipCapital. Please go ahead.
Hi. One question remained unanswered. What is the number of loans that we disperse on a monthly run rate basis? And I understand there will be quarterly variations, but still there will be a quarterly or a monthly number that we will have in terms of our budget.
About 4,000 loans a month is what we disperse.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from Dixit Shah from SNNC Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello. Thank you for the follow-up. The second question that I had was on cost of borrowing. So overall, we have seen 100 bps decline in the repo, and we have a credit rating upgrade. So overall, for the whole year, what would be the impact in the cost of borrowing that we could see in the by end of FY26?
Right. So I think first very important to understand what is the composition of our cost of borrowing. The repo linked cost of borrowing is about 20%. About 60% comes from MCLR linked borrowing, and MCLR of banks have not come down. So while we may see 100 basis points decline in repo, the MCLR reflection has not yet happened. The deposit rates have started to come down, and it is expected that MCLR will come down. So this transition takes time. So currently we are at 8.4. By December, I'm expecting this to go down towards 8.1. By March, we should definitely be at around 8 or maybe slightly lower than 8. So that is the expectation. Unless, of course, the bank's MCLR goes down much faster, then that full transition will also play out in our cost of borrowing. But broadly, we would expect 50 to 60 basis points transition by end of March.
Understood. And what will be the impact on our yields then correspondingly? How much would we pass on?
So we have to discuss it in the ALCO. We have not done that yet because we first have to reflect the benefit in the cost of borrowing. So only Q3 or Q4 will be start passing it on. We expect the spread to be maintained in a 5 to 5.25 broad range.
Okay, 5 to 5.25 is the spread that we want to maintain. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the last question in queue. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Manoj Viswanathan for closing comments.
Thank you everyone for participating and engaging in the call. We hope we have been able to answer the questions to your satisfaction. In case you want to reach out for further questions, you can always reach out to Deepak Khetan or write to us on investor.relations@homefirstindia.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Home First Finance Company India Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.